Going somewhere this week? You are obviously not alone. Across the globe, tourism is on the rise.
We'll go to Bombay, Taipei, Mandalay, Bora Bora, Kowloon, Cameroon, Brigadoon, to the moon, let's go everywhere, man.
According to the World Tourism Organization, 2018 saw a record 1.4 billion international tourist arrivals. And our planet is feeling it.
It's so damn hot!
By some estimates, global tourism accounts for nearly 10% of the world's carbon emissions. And with more travelers continuing to head to the skies, tourism is going to be a piece of the climate change puzzle for years to come. Some of you told us you're thinking about climate change as you make your travel plans.
Hi, this is Luana Rubin in Boulder, Colorado. I travel extensively, and so I am very concerned about the footprint that my travel could leave on the planet. So I try to sign up for trips and tours that make a point of having a small footprint and that is sustainable.
Hi, this is Amy from Traverse City, and we just took a trip to LA area, and I carried coffee mug and a water bottle, and none of us used cups on the plane. We used the metro scooters and bicycles, which was awesome to get around town. So our rental car sat for 3 days untouched.
Hi, my name is William. I'm calling from Los Angeles, and I have purchased carbon offsets when I have traveled in Europe and Australia. They were between $3 and $10 per leg of my flight, and I've looked for them on U.S. flights and it's not an option. I would definitely buy them if they were available.
Hi, this is Sarah calling from Lansing, Michigan. We always tell our kids we don't ever take a vacation from recycling. If we're going someplace remote, we plan to bring all of our recycling back with us. When we travel abroad, we always choose a resort that's eco-friendly. It's very important to us.
What does responsible tourism actually look like at this moment of climate change urgency? I'm Arun Venugopal in for Tanzina Vega, and we're going to talk about it on The Takeaway. I have two people with me to talk through this. Martha Honey is co-founder and executive director of the Center for Responsible Travel, and she's also the editor of a book called Cruise Tourism in the Caribbean. And Jeremy Smith is a writer and tourism consultant and author of the book Transforming Travel. Welcome to you both.
Hey there, Aaron.
Martha, let's start with the numbers here. Exactly how big is the tourism industry today?
There's 1.4 billion people traveling internationally this year. It's expected to reach 2 billion by 2030 or before. And it is one of the few industries that's continued to grow year after year despite economic downturns.
Okay, we've been seeing this term come into parlance, over tourism. Has the industry grown too rapidly?
I think so. What we've seen is a convergence of a number of different trends within the industry, ranging from the growth of cruise tourism and Airbnbs to cheaper air flights, the growth of the middle class, the entry in big numbers of countries like China and India into the international travel market, social media, the sort of selfie culture and bucket list culture. All of these are contributing to people going to specific places and causing what is known as over-tourism, and also the lack of management by governments. That's a very important piece of it.
So how much do we know about the impact of all this travel on the climate?
Well, we know quite a bit. The exact figures of CO2 or greenhouse gas emissions are somewhat unclear for the tourism industry. It's somewhere up around 10%, with air travel contributing substantially and cruise tourism also contributing substantially. And we've also seen that the tourism industry is extremely vulnerable to climate change. The most popular type of vacation is along the coasts, on beaches. And so this is the most built-up sector of the tourism industry and also is extremely vulnerable to climate change.
Jeremy, at the individual level, tell us more about the biggest drivers of climate change in terms of tourism. We're talking about air travel. What else?
Well, I mean, I think we can't go on to the what else without making it very clear that it is primarily air travel. And as Martha said, I mean, it varies obviously depending on how far you fly, but it's somewhere between 50, 70, 80% of an individual trip. And so once we move beyond the flight, then there is the accommodation, the food one buys, the way one gets around. But they are a small piece of the pie compared to the transport that gets us there and back.
So tell us a little more about how much carbon an average international trip emits and what it takes to offset that.
Okay, well, I'm sitting here in London, a return flight between London and New York in economy class. It's going to depend upon how new your plane is, but it's looking at 1.5, 1.6, 1.7 tons of carbon dioxide per person, which is still hard to really visualize. But I think there was a report from Nature Climate Change last year that said that each person on a return trip, London to New York, accounts for 32 square feet of melting Arctic sea ice.
Wow. Now, a lot of environmental activists have expressed skepticism about carbon offsets. What is your take on them? Should individuals take on the responsibility here, and are they effective?
The idea that by paying for an offset, somehow my flight's impact upon the environment is removed is wrong. And that is the prime reason that people are resistant to the idea that carbon offsets neutralize a flight. And there are multiple reasons for that, to do with whether you're planting trees that are going to take decades to grow and absorb the carbon, whether you can actually ensure that the project was going to happen regardless, and various other things to do with how well you'd ensure the project will be maintained and will continue to deliver what it's doing. That said, do I believe that someone who is causing pollution to the atmosphere shouldn't do some form of remedial work to do it? Yes, I do believe so. I mean, put it this way, I offset the flights, the trips I take, and whatever else I consider in my life has a significant carbon impact. But I don't consider that's the final thing I do. I do everything I can to minimize. And when I'm left going, you know what, that's what's left, then I offset.
Martha, what efforts are we seeing within the industry, the tourism industry, and namely with major companies? What are they doing to tackle the reality of climate change, if anything?
Right. I mean, all companies are working on reducing their fuel costs. It's the largest cost that they have in airplanes, and they're trying to make more fuel-efficient airplanes. There are a number of experimentations with also trying to develop non-fossil fuel consuming planes. And there was actually in 2016, I believe, the first round-the-world flight by a solar-powered plane. I mean, a very, very small one-person plane. Mm-hmm. But still, it made it around the world. So there are efforts underway. I think the industry can do much more. I think governments need to be pushing the industry to do much more, and consumers need to be. And I totally agree with Jeremy that carbon offset is not going to solve the problem of pollution by planes, because what you're doing is you're paying another company, basically, or another organization to do something green on behalf of the airline industry. We have to keep the pressure on the airline industry. But I also think that it's very important to remember that we should not completely stop flying, because tourism is the most important foreign exchange earner for developing countries around the world, along with oil. And we know that oil is not a good alternative, at least tourism done well, done responsibly, has the capacity to do some good in countries. So I think we have to continue to fly, but we have to figure out ways to do it in smarter ways, take longer haul trips and stay longer in those destinations rather than a whole series of long haul trips, use alternative transport, as Jeremy mentioned, whenever possible, and so on. But we need to keep seeing the world, both because it's important to developing countries and it's important to our education.
So you think that there is a case to be made for improving the quality in terms of the sustainability of the tourism? Do you think that is inevitably going to be more expensive for the individual tourist?
Well, I think that remains to be seen. I mean, certainly the research and development of green planes is expensive. Perhaps at the end of the day, they'll end up being cheaper than fossil fuel planes. I don't think we know that yet. And certainly as they come online and we get more and more of them, then the price will inevitably go down, as we always see. I think we simply need to keep the pressure on the industry. We've seen, for instance, within tourism over the last 20, 25 years, the growth of a whole variety of eco-certification programs. But most of them are for accommodation, not for transport. And so we need to be trying to develop standards, green standards for transport as well.
Jeremy, given what you've told us about carbon emissions of flights, could campaigns to keep people from traveling altogether be part of the solution?
There are these campaigns, these sort of flight shame campaigns and Flight Free 2020 in the UK and Europe that are happening. I think they are a part of the solution. But I think we have to be careful. I mean, as you said in your question, you said you shifted from saying flights to travel. I don't think we should be stopping people from travel. I think travel is an incredibly important part of who we are as humans. But we don't necessarily need to be designing a life which involves a quick weekend flight here and there back and forth to Europe, just to another city to go shopping. And a lot of the focus, backing up what Martha was just saying, on looking at how we might price this fairly, is to say we can't price the opportunity for a holiday out of the reach of those, everyone except for the very wealthy. But some form of fair taxation, they're talking about a way that the first flight has no tax. The second time, the tax increases. The third flight of year, the tax increases even more. So the people who frequently fly are being made to pay the most. But those who get one chance for a dream holiday actually potentially make it more available to them.
Martha, you've argued that people who travel do actually care more about climate change. Tell us more about that. How does it work?
Well, I think we're seeing, you know, it's taken time, but there's been now a couple of generations where the terms like ecotourism and sustainable tourism, responsible travel have been part of our lexicon. And we've had standards being developed through certification programs. So it is, you know, filtering down to the traveling public. And I think also we're seeing, particularly with millennials, that there's a real interest in environmental protection and a real concern. And the urgency, of course, is being driven by climate change and also by over-tourism. I do think that you put your finger on one of the real dilemmas, which is how, at a time when we definitely are going to have some limitations on travel, particularly to certain places, destinations, and areas, how do we keep travel democratic? And I think in addition to what Jeremy said about people who travel more by plane paying more in taxes, there are other techniques that are being talked about, reservation systems for key museums, key national parks, and other attractions around the world where people have to sign up beforehand. The good thing about this is that when they get there, it will not be overcrowded because the numbers will be controlled by a limited number of tickets, but it will be a first-come, first-served basis so that it can be open to people of a range of different economic capacities. So I think we have to think creatively about how we keep, as we have to constrain the number of tourists going to specific areas, how we also keep the processes we put in place democratic, and we don't simply do it by raising the price.
Jeremy Smith is a writer and tourism consultant and author of the book Transforming Travel, and Martha Honey is co-founder and executive director of the Center for Responsible Travel. Thank you both.
Thank you, Arun.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.